Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Check it out ourselves or wait for reinforcements?
Call for backup. We're gonna be here for a while.
Everybody down, get down!
I don't speak Hungarian.
Yeah, me either.
FBI.
New York Children's Hospital just got hit with a cyber attack.
Find the motive, use it to track the hacker down.
Somebody from the Bureau got her killed.
There's a fox in the hen house.
International child abduction.
We're moving in with you.
Everybody down!
Let's dig in, people. Let's go.
So, welcome back, ladies and gents. I got another special guest here. Janelle is part of the Dick Wolf Universe fandom here, and she's going to help us sort out the FBI trilogy.
Hello, CBS. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Yeah, no, I've been looking so much forward to this show, just with how it just, much like the Chicago shows, just show just the increasingly, you know, easily irritable and office politics and everything, and all the Law and Order showing just very hard to prosecute crimes. You know, this show just showcases just all kinds of espionage and even just other thing resorted to, you know, string of just career criminals, computer hackings, and even you know, white supremacist terrorists, you know.
yeah. I love all the shows. Like, it's incredible, like all of them.
Oh yeah, it's a great marathon each time. So as we speak, FBI is in its fourth season. The first spinoff, Most Wanted, is in season three, and International has just premiered in its first season this year. Yeah. So what got you into a lot of these Dick Wolf productions? Was it just kind of their captivating mystery, or just their edginess, or just the characterization? What was it that made you say, I'm going to tune in each week and set my recorder?
Okay, well, I guess from I was younger, I was always into crime shows. I mean, SVU is going on, what, 23 years? Yeah, so yeah. I grew up watching Law and Order. And I might say I only watch SVU. I haven't watched Criminal Intent or the original Law and Order.
It was the most often syndicated, to be fair. So, you know.
Yes.
It's kind of like with Star Trek, where we talked about those who had seen the original 60s one versus the, you know, next generation in Deep Space Nine, you know, so.
Yeah, well, I don't watch that, but yeah, I get you. But okay. So I always grew up watching SVU, Without a Trace, CSI, and all those. Nice. So, like, I watch, yeah. I'm into those. Right? I will sit and watch all of those Criminal Minds and
those stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of the current stuff. Nice. So, yeah, no. I think that's a good counterpoint, because I do feel like the main FBI show is kind of trying to be kind of like 24, kind of, you know, race against time, diffusing a bunch of bombs, kind of Die Hard free or speed style. And yes, Most Wanted kind of takes a Criminal Minds approach, where they are always trying to, you know, play cat and mouse with just serial bank robbers or arsonists. And International is kind of interesting, because it kind of takes a Taken kind of approach, where, you know, they're just always trying to stop just everyday kidnappers.
Yeah.
But they go a step further. Because, I mean, Criminal Minds did try that, and it just wasn't very successful with either audiences or critics, because they just kind of felt like it was just not well written.
Yes, but the Criminal Minds, what, Behind the Borders?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it only got, what, 3 seasons?
It got 2 seasons, but it was kind of dead on arrival. But it is interesting how Elena de la Garza was on Law and Order, then she was on that Criminal Minds show, and then she came here to Most Wanted.
Oh my God, yes. We love her. We love her as we love. She's amazing.
Yeah. I do have... So, yeah, let's start with the casting. I had seen... So, Zico Zaki plays OA. He's the Middle Eastern American agent. Yes. And he's been on so many movies and shows, like as a guest star. And I remembered he played a terrorist on the last season they did at 24, and like 3 episodes or something like that. He was like manning a drone or something. He just has a very distinct look to him that just, you're like, I trust you. Whatever you're gonna say, I trust you, dude. And
yeah, but unfortunately, I've only seen him in FBI. I know he's in other shows, but I've only seen him in FBI.
Well, and this is the fun too. Like, I was watching a bunch of shows like Rizzoli and Isles and catching up on NCIS, so I saw plenty of people who are now on shows like this before they were famous.
Yes.
And it's always fun doing that. Just like, oh, that guy playing that kind of character.
I like Rizzoli and Isles. That was a really good show too.
Oh, totally. And these guys all got a good rapport. It never kind of really even becomes a buddy show so much as a just kind of a professional working relationship with all of them. I had seen Missy Perigin, who plays Maggie in plenty of other things, and like Stick It was one. It was like kind of a
God, Stick It. Yes, I think everybody supposed to know Maggie from Stick It. I mean, come on.
Yeah, who would have guessed? But yeah, I guess because she was on that Rookie Blue show and a few other Canadian productions, like Reaper was one that was kind of popular for a few minutes.
Yeah, I watched Rookie Blue twice because I have to, because I mean, come on, you have to. I feel like watching it over again because it's amazing.
Oh yeah, totally. And so yeah, I think she had a pretty cool TV resume already ahead of her, and she definitely guest starred on an SVU episode.
Yes. That's the reason. The reason that episode where she I don't remember the episode, but Bicol says that was her performance, why he wanted her to be in FBI. Her performance.
Oh, I'm sure.
In that SVU episode.
Okay, nice. So you work for the Dick Wolf camp, they'll invite you back sooner or later. Just talking about the themes, it really doesn't have any connection to Chicago other than using a similar kind of style that they're using now. You shoot fast and quick. Haley Upton from Chicago PD did show up on an FBI episode briefly, but that was...
Yes, that was crazy. We like that. We the FBI fan, we like her. I mean, I would love to see her again, to be honest.
Maybe. I mean, if she and Voight don't break the law at the end of this oh ninth season of Chicago.
I don't know how that's going to happen, though. Missy said that it's going to be difficult to have a crossover with, you know, the shows because, you know, one CBS show is on CBS and one is on NBC. It's going to be
weird because it's like they're both owned by the same production company, but yet because they're a different distributor, I think that's just it.
They could always do it again, like have Mariska come over on FBI. That would be cool. Or
I know he teased it when it first came out. He's like, you might see Benson walk across the screen briefly, but
oh my god. Or have Oe go on Organized Crime. It's just okay. Imagine a scene with Oe and Stabler. Come on, that would be something.
Oh, totally, because he was working for an international task force. It's like the next step up would totally be working for the FBI for Stabler. But
yeah.
And it would also just be funny to see, I don't know, Munch or Finn or Rollins.
Oh my god. A lot of things can happen. But
oh, totally. Carisi's now working, was a cop, and now he's working as an attorney. Yeah. He could give him a subpoena for some international campaign and say,
oh my god,
I need you to testify in court against this man who bombed a court building or something. You know?
Right. And Barb is coming back. Oh my god, I'm excited for that. Yes.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Yes, he's coming back.
Because it was so much fun even seeing on SV Special Victims Unit did that like 500th episode or something like that, and they brought back Danny Pino's Amaro and yes, Captain Cragen,
yeah.
And what's her name? The medic, Turner. That was cool.
Yeah, Tamara Tooney. Yeah.
So how do you feel like, since half these guys have been in that franchise, how do you feel about their roles here? Because I mean, Jeremy Sisko, you know, he was already great on Law and Order. How do you think this role compares here as the assistant FBI director Valentine?
Okay, so I love Jeremy Sisko's character. I mean, I love every single character, the main characters on FBI. I didn't watch the Law and Order with him and Alana. So I have no idea how his character was.
That was pretty much our intro. Elena was a attorney to Sam Waterston's Jack McCoy, and he was one of the detectives with Anthony Anderson. I think he's coming to his own right in the role, and especially with what they've done recently, where they have him, they've introduced more about his family life. They've done more. Giving him more to do than just shout orders and make difficult calls.
Yes. I like Juba. I love how he runs the job. I mean,
he makes everyone feel confident and yet answer for their actions. I like how the show shows difficult to prosecute stuff and less of the, you know, people running around disobeying orders. They actually get reprimanded if they do something wrong.
I mean, they have to pack all of that within 42 minutes. It goes by like really quick. But sometimes you really wanted to see more happening, but you can't because you know it's just 42 minutes. So I mean they do what they can do.
Oh, totally. And I like how they're giving all the techs and computer guys more to do sometimes. Transfer and be up in the field.
I love all the others.
That was interesting. The new gal they got on here, this one African-American gal who used to be a cop, who's now a FBI
agent. Oh my god, Tiffany Wallace. Oh my god, I love her. I love her dynamic. She came in strong, like really strong. I love it.
She apparently had a huge like Broadway resume, and this is like one of her first big TV things.
She went to Juilliard, I think?
I think so. Either way, Dick Wolf is loyal to New York, so he helps out anyone on Broadway. He's like, but yeah, Catherine Renee Turner is her name, and Agent Wallace. I looked at other stuff she had done. She had really just kind of just done experimental short films and like web series here and there. So
I'm really looking forward to know more about her background. She's a facey one. I like it. I mean, she punched her lieutenant.
Yeah.
She's a tasty one.
And Valentine, Oh, totally. And Valentine's got an unusual dilemma where he's with Kathleen Monroe's gal from DC. He's got a romantic relationship with her, and she's she's playing office politics with the FBI director that Elena de la Garza plays. Mm-hmm. Her name is Isabel Castillo, and but I really dug how I really feel like Elena de la Garza really grew as an actress, especially here by this time. You know, she's already done Law and Order and the CSIs, but here, you know, she flat out got to be very more emotional, and she's having to be even more considerate because she could get fired if the Bureau doesn't agree with how she handles every case. And I like how she eventually every once in a while has to say, you know, you must accept this case, step down, you know, and will not disobey my order. Otherwise you'll get fired, and then I'll probably get fired. You know?
I mean, come on. And she was willing to give up her job in the season 3 finale. I mean, because when the analyst Elise had the...
Yeah, she was going after the big rampant cartel guy. And
she was willing. She was all in. She was willing. She was risking her life in that episode.
Yeah, and she's really good at just kind of cutting through red tape, as well as just telling other people, do not BS me. You know, I do this on a daily basis, so I know what the talk actually means, so don't poo-poo me, you know, when I say this.
She's not afraid to, like, say something. I mean, she was rough with Juho, she's rough with OA, I mean, she was rough with Tiffany, and she was rough with Scola. I think the only person she hasn't been rough with is Maggie.
Yeah, she's gone along with a few different incidents, but I do remember she used to be hard on it. She seems to be okay with Maggie, but yeah, she did have to reprimand Turner a few times when she got involved in a personal case that conflicted with a cousin. But and she's constantly pretty much telling OA, you will serve this subpoena or do this kind of thing. And he's like, well, that's not what I signed up for. He's like, well, the Bureau is going to go with it, so you have to go with this. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news. So again, I'm your boss, so you definitely can't shoot the messenger on this one. But it was an interesting change. Because, I mean, we had CeeLo Ward, you know, from The Fugitive and CSI New York as the main director in season 1. And then they just had her take off. And I don't know if the actress just wasn't digging the role or...
Well, she had... in the show, she retired. I love her as the boss.
She was gentle.
I missed her. Yes, I missed her. Like, I really miss her.
I mean,
and then you cannot compare Isabel with Dana. You just can't. Because
no, Isabel just, I don't know.
You simply cannot choose which is better. No, you cannot do that because they're both awesome. They were
apples
awesome
and oranges. Yeah. And I saw some people complain about the acting, but it seems like they were just complaining about the first few episodes in each series where all the actors are just getting comfortable, you know, getting into character. And people kind of forget when you sell a pilot, nothing is going to be 100%. There's going to be some unfinished computer graphics. There's going to be a few rushed scenes, maybe a predictable story. You know, you don't know. You're trying to get everyone's attention before you get picked up. Yeah. And then when you get picked up, then you can, you know, go back to the drawing board and see what things aren't working. Yeah. I think they knew what they wanted. They had to rush because that's what they often do. I remember Jerry Orbach used to joke, you know, you get two takes and that's it on these shows. So I think that is a lot of the things. You get like 2 to 5 takes for extra coverage and that's it. You know, there is no constant repeating.
Okay. But I think I fell in love with the show. I think the third, probably fourth episode. To be honest,
I was addicted to it, and it helped that they had like 2 episodes at a time back to back, but there was also moments where it's just like, okay, but now by episode 3 or 4 now I'm comfortable. And at times I kind of am even more reminded of earlier Law and Order crossed over shows, kind of like In Plain Sight and Homicide, which they did crossovers with. And some when you get to Most Wanted, I mean, I think that's a good segue here. So I was already a fan of Julian McMahon, but he kind of vanished for a while. Did a few other things in I think Australia, which is where he's from.
And I think he was in. I know he's in other shows. I think Charmed.
Nip Tuck. But What's funny is I remember seeing parts of Profiler, which was like his first big break into TV fandom. And so it was interesting seeing him in, once again, another federal agent role, but he wasn't playing a alcohol, tobacco, firearm agent, you know, an ATF guy. He, instead, he's playing a federal agent who's just used to profiling, you know, just deadly felons who, you know, got a death wish on him. And
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm just contrasting it here with this role, you know, with Most Wanted, because, you know, I kind of got, did you get kind of Stabler from SVU vibes from him, kind of?
Not quite. I mean,
he's a different cool character, but I'm just,
they're still building Jess. I mean, we know that he has a daughter and his wife passed, but we don't see quite much as Stabler. I mean, we know Stabler for what, 23 years?
Yeah, Stabler was always closed down from his family.
With Jess now, I mean, there's still a lot to learn with every character on each show.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Julian plays Jess LaCroix, and it is interesting, yeah, like you say, how he had that sharpshooter on his team who was like a family friend. They had his daughter's like half Native American, and him having to reconcile with his father who had been like in some kind of service but not there most of his life. So,
Clinton Sky was his brother-in-law. It was his
That's what it was, brother. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then he left the show.
Yeah, I don't know if the actor had a schedule conflict, but a lot of these guys, I don't know if they want to challenge themselves or they get called to do another role that interferes, but they always leave the door open.
Even though with Keenan Lutz, I was surprised. I was so sad after the premiere, like after the show ended, he posted saying that he's going to exit the show for, you know, personal reasons and stuff.
Kellen Lutz. Yeah. He played Agent Crosby. And I think he said he wanted to spend some more time with his
family,
kids, and I'm sure he'll come back. But they gave him a good exit, to be fair, where he gets injured in the line of duty. And
yeah.
I dug Ortiz. I dug Keisha Cashley Hughes, Hacker Gibson. Them. Yeah, yeah, Roxy Sternberg's good as Barnes, but
yes, Barnsley. I call her Barnsley after Jess said it in the one episode. He called her Barnsley after that. Like, oh, it's good. Strictly Barnsley for me right now.
Whatever works. Were you familiar with Alexa Davalos as Special Agent Gaines' character?
No, actually, it's the first. I like her character. Yeah, I love.
She's
love
been in so many things: Defiance, Chronicles of Riddick, The Mist, and Pancho Villa with Antonio Banderas. And this was an interesting role for her because, yeah, she's like a special agent for the FBI, and she was basically.
I heard that her husband is. I forgot his name, but he played in Criminal Minds. Will.
Oh, really?
Joshua Stewart, I think.
Let me look.
I think that's her husband.
Yes, Josh Stewart, you're right. I had no idea.
Yes. Okay, I'm familiar with her husband because he was in Criminal Minds.
So there you go.
And he did a movie with his co-star, AJ Cook, in Backcountry, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. A lot of those Criminal Minds actors have been in movies together, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, good but catch.
I don't know much about Alexa. No.
Yeah, she's a beautiful French actress who's played all kinds of roles. And like you say, I think it was interesting for her how they brought her on because you don't know if she has her own agenda.
She literally just saved their life because in the premiere episode of Most Wanted, she shot one of the suspects.
She almost got shot, but she saw him brandishing a gun, and he was the sneaky kind as opposed to the, you know, nothing to lose kind.
Yeah, she came in with a high. I mean, I love her because she saved the team. And her character is so calming, like the way she talks. I mean, she's so calming.
I saw some complaining about how she speaks, and I'm like, how can you not hear what she speaks? She's very reserved, and that's what I would buy any federal agent, you know, to kind of be like. But yeah, the characterizations are very interesting on these shows, and it seems like those who complain just seem to just, I don't know, they weren't going to be impressed by any of it regardless. So it's just like, what do you think a federal agent sounds like? You know, I think of them as something more than just a cop. So,
I mean, come on. But yeah, I love all their characters. Yeah. And Hannah, oh my God, Hannah is like, she's so funny. I think Hannah is like really funny.
Yeah. I mean, Keisha Cashel Hughes, you know, she'd always been busy on some new Australian movie and New Zealand, I think, actually, my bad. But it was interesting how, yeah, with her, I think she really grew to like this role because she's like, I'm doing all kinds of computer hacking. I'm, you know, finding photoshopped IDs.
Yeah. And her episode where she had a stalk, I mean, oh.
That was really cool because it's just like, it can backfire on anyone. They can get you out of a van when you're coming out of the building even.
It was kind of creepy. That was kind of creepy to know that she had a stalker.
Totally. And I do like how they show the supremacists, and it seems like some of the guys complaining, I've seen some real Nazi worthy comments on social media. It's like, what do you think is the common theme, guys? It's going to often be someone who's smuggling in weapons for an NRA gun nut or, you know.
For which one?
Oh, just for any of these shows, you know, it's like, it's more likely going to be a white supremacist. We've been showing it in media for years and it has been a growing issue. And
Yeah, it has. But with Most Wanted, they're very brutal on that show. I mean, I think it's one of the most brutal sequel show there is. I mean, they're crazy. Bodies be jumping like flies over in that show.
Especially, oh man, they had someone who was like from the I liked how they fictionalized this, who was like from a January 6th riot, who gets in an intense shootout with them. And we're talking... Yeah. We're talking Heat or Den of Thieves worthy shootouts. That was intense. But as like, I can see that there's plenty of people from that who.
Yeah, I like how they rip things out of the headline and just put it in the show.
Oh, totally. And
I mean, it's crazy. Sometimes, like, I mean, especially with SVU, I'm watching the episode and I was like, but this seems so familiar. Like, I've heard it.
You know? Yeah, they say like, it.
Oh, yes, it was in the news yesterday. I mean, it could be in the news yesterday, and they write it on the show.
Oh, totally. And there's plenty of pre-Me Too movement stuff, you know, on some of these. But, I mean, on all these shows. But, I mean, we saw how, you know, cops were reacting unprofessionally to Black Lives Matter incidents. And we saw how... I liked how they, I mean, with the newest Law and Order organized crime, they did a good job of even having it be where some criminals were smuggling in bootleg COVID-19 supplies. And it's like,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yes.
So it's like, all this stuff is, you know, telling of the times and just showing that, you know, I could see someone having to deal with that. Would it probably end in 40 minutes, you know, let alone one episode? Probably not. But hey, you know, you know what to suspend belief on. And I feel like they do a good job of at least keeping them contained, you know, not going. I mean,
they have to do what they can to do. They have to do, right?
Yeah. As good as the subpoena does. And it makes for rewarding entertainment still. So let's go to international. I mean, I did not know how this was going to play out, and they kept it very quiet on who was going to be the leads. And
yeah, so it's Scott Forrester, Luke. I will not pronounce his last name. I don't want to butcher his last name. So I guess he's the
Fun fact. Dick Wolf did a similar show with the lovely French actor Jean Reno called Joe that was kind of similar to this. So it was interesting seeing him kind of do a similar kind of thing like this, where it's like we're showing, you know, European savvy agents. And I'll tell you, some of those kidnapping cases have been very brutal. Like we saw like a 5-year old. I don't know how they got that performance, made it look like he was fainting, you know.
Oh wow.
So yeah, definitely even more brutal on here. They don't really go into like sex crimes or anything. They mainly just go into people faking passports, extorting stuff overseas, you know.
Yeah, but I think the episode last night, it was based on some pornography thing. Yeah, I couldn't, I think I was a little bit distracted from watching FBI, the FBI episode because of what happened in the last scene. So I have to watch over International because I missed some things in that episode.
Yeah, they did a good job of leading it all up where they were going after the guy from The Mummy, Odin Farr, as a ruthless businessman. They do a good job on some other production aspects. I'm not always impressed by some CGI, but for the most part, it's pretty slam bang. It's a mix of both, where the explosion might be, you know, CGI fire, but the debris falling over people is real.
Some of them are real. Some of the green screen are ridiculous. You can ask me, it's crazy.
The guy falling to his desk was not 100%, but fortunately, it lasted only 5 seconds. So,
yeah.
Different budget, guys, for TV. Overall, though, they do a good job of making it still look like something you could see on a big screen and you wouldn't accept.
I mean, they did their best.
Totally. And what do you think will be next for this franchise? I mean, I can't see them doing another spinoff. I think they're good for now.
That would be crazy.
Yeah, it would just be too much. But
that would be crazy. I mean, they would have to wait until when International reach probably season 5 or something like that. So I don't know. I think it's good for now. Plus, if they do that, people won't have a social life. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you can. One of them's gonna have to end first before you do just another one. And
I cannot see anyone. I don't want none of them to end. I want them to be like, well, especially FBI. I want it to be the next SVU reaching like 23 seasons.
Maybe. I mean, especially Most Wanted, because I mean, because they really did keep it so simple and just beautiful, like with just how. I mean, they're talking about even deeper issues like people messing with private property and reservations, just really heated stuff that does need to be talked about. And
Most Wanted going more depth and they're more family wise. I think, well, I
do feel them click as a family. That's true. Cause it's like for a while, the main FBI was kind of the Maggie and OA show. And then when they finally brought on the other guys, like, oh, what's his name? Great actor. Well, maybe not great, John Boyd's character. Don't you find it so funny how he came from being on
Bones? The eights?
Well, Bones as an FBI agent who was being mentored. But even before that, he was like a computer tech who worked at the counterterrorist unit on 24, eighth season, which was set in New York. So there you go. There's this theme here.
I didn't know about that.
It's so funny. But when he came on screen, you know, in his first episode as Agent Scola, I totally sold. I loved how he had just the, not to be personal, I don't know how to express it, but you can count on me. And he had kind of that, I'm butchering it, but I liked how he kind of had that reserved old school appeal. And yet the actor just did such a good job of just showing, he's like, I care about you. But again, because I've been a reserved, you know, brainwashed a certain way, I just can't express it, but I got you.
Stuart is awesome. I love all the characters. And I actually miss Christine so much.
Totally. And much like Law and Order, they do a good job of like, especially with Criminal Intent and later SVU seasons, I like how they essentially will have them, they'll switch them around. Like, we're doing a case together tonight while the other guy, you know, is in sick leave or finding themselves or doing some other personal thing, taking time off, or they're doing a computer hacking thing that's, again, requires extra hands on deck so they can arrest those guys. But
But I think FBI is slowly not being a Maggie and OA show anymore because, you know, they incorporate, you know, they have Stewart.
It was interesting how he was supervising the international team, and then he was having to decide, does he want to keep doing this? And he had to basically give up his current girlfriend. He's like, sorry, I'm married to the job. You know,
right.
I cannot give it up.
Oh my God, that was
I don't crazy. Trust anyone else or anything else. It's nothing personal.
Yeah.
And he's tried to save so many members of his Middle Eastern community at times even too. And I think that's really just kind of the main core of the issues that he has to deal with. He's like, who can I find and actually save who's not going to be sent to probably a, you know,
yeah.
a prison that they send all terrorists to?
Yeah, or, he tried to compartmentalize, but sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it doesn't.
Totally. And they've done a good job of evolving Maggie. And I think Missy Pergham and the writers got together after the actress was pregnant off screen. They didn't show it, but I think she decided, okay, let's give me a cool arc for, you know, we all got to grow sometimes. So, you know, let's have these characters all essentially just, you know, keep having another dilemma where they have to crime solved differently. They have to, because for a while she would kind of just be taking some of these, doing a lot of hostage negotiations. Like, okay, well, she doesn't. We already got Olivia Benson on, you know, SVU or Gorin, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio on Criminal Intent. We don't. She can be her own deal where she basically is just trying to, instead of the billions, who can I save someone? How about I just. Just look out for everybody on the team, and just they made her be kind of more playful with her crime solving now, which is like that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great. I think she's playing an awesome role. I love how she's you know, she's friend with everyone, you know, and I could see like her I think she could also be a profiler if you ask me. She's good at that. Mm-hmm. And like you said, negotiation. Yeah. Maybe we could see more of her in the future doing that.
I would hope. Because, I mean, they kind of exhausted all the bank robbery stuff and they knew it. So they keep it very sparingly now. Now it's more just kind of more up-to-date stuff like Bitcoin and cyber hacking, theft, and just even... you know, just activists, I think, is always a good starting point. And you know an episode is going to get explosive, literally. Because, you know, it's like, those are always heated issues. And
yeah, there's a lot of bombing episodes. I mean, talk about the pilot. I think the pilot had like 4 or 5 bombing.
Yeah, you open up with a politician who's behind a current bombing to increase his ratings, and it's like, man,
it was crazy.
Diabolical. Was that aimed at Andrew Cuomo? What was that aimed at?
I forgot his name. And he was the same guy who was in
SVU as that crooked serial killer representing himself. Dallas Chicago Roberts TV. Is the actor.
Oh my God, that was crazy. That was a very intense crossover.
He's been playing a lot of creeps, both on movies and guest starring on shows, and he just has that face where he could be your best friend, or he could be the most, you know, biggest career criminal.
But with the, I realized that most of the Wolf Entertainment cast, they each are almost had an episode in SVU. Everyone gets starred in SVU. Almost everyone.
Almost, yeah.
Almost, a lot of them.
They're not far away. Totally. So if you had to choose just one character, who's going to be on your desktop or wallpaper?
Oh my God, I'm about to out myself right now.
There's a lot of likable ones, just like on these Law and Order ones that everyone generally likes. My God.
So for my desktop, it's of course it's Maggie and OA. it is a photo of Maggie and OA for the I think it's the season 4 premiere shoot, I think. Yeah, so I have them as my laptop back wallpaper.
Okay. Cool. Very nice. They don't really do too much advertisement of the computer companies, I noticed too. I maybe saw like a few Cisco's, maybe a few Apple's or Microsoft, right? But
no,
very sparingly, not much in advertising, which is interesting. No.
Yes, because in SVU, I think Apple is, I see Apple everywhere.
Yeah, totally. Apple,
yeah, and Apple everywhere.
Maybe a Linux in an earlier season. I don't know. Yeah. Pretty sparse on the computers.
No,
it would be funny though if they got Joel De La Fuente's computer tech guy from SVU over there one time as a freelancer.
Really? Okay.
It'd be funny if they did that. They haven't, but it'd be funny.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think the show's still got some life in it. I'd give each of them maybe 5 more seasons and then just say, you know, again, you know, they don't have too long.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I can hear you.
What
were
you saying?
Oh, we lost communication. I was just saying, I think all these shows got at least maybe 5 more seasons in them, and then I think that would be a good ending point. I don't think they need to go on endlessly.
Oh my God, I want FBI and Most Wanted to like go on for like, I don't know, endless. I want it to go on.
Okay. I think some of them have stronger ones.
I mean, the cool shows, they have been running, I think Chicago is at their 10th season?
With Fire? Yes. And yes, PD is one season away. So, yeah, I think PD can end with basically, you know, Voight going to jail or someone else shuts down the unit and that's it.
And that's it.
The rest move on to a better police squadron, but yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting how Fire seems to be mature of the two, and Chicago Med is a like it or hate it. And much like these, I mean, I do like how everyone chooses which one they do or don't like. There's some who prefer the original FBI, and there's others who think Most Wanted is edgier. And then,
yeah,
we got a few other pals who thought International was kind of the best of them. So it is interesting just seeing all those compare and contrast, because either way, you basically win.
Well, that's true. But for me, I prefer FBI, the original, then Most Wanted, and then International. Mm-hmm. But a lot of persons like the fandom, to the fandom, a lot of them like Most Wanted because they love that family dynamic that they get from the show.
Yeah.
FBI is not like that because we know little to nothing about any of the characters. I mean, we know some, but...
I think it's just, I like their persona more and their manhunts. I just know I'm going to be emotionally drained after a cool long in chase. And then Jess or at least one of the three others are going to have some interesting just personal event. But I'm with you. I do think FBI has slowly gotten more and more personal. International was probably the only of the three that got the most personal because...
Oh my God.
Instantly, we know these agents are sleeping with each other and one of them is injured.
Oh my God. Because I watched it live and I liked it. I was shook it to the core when I saw JV in his bed. I was like, what? I mean, the first episode? Oh, wow.
Very first. Get right to it, baby.
It was crazy. I was not expecting that at all.
So I guess that is what it does better. It does go to the unexpected more often than not.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, anything can happen. Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So you're part of the FBI fam hashtag on Twitter. It's very interesting seeing how that's been building up on social media.
Everyone's, I mean, it is.
Much like when Chicago.
I mean, I'm multi-fandom if you ask me, because I basically like it like every night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But you cannot miss a Tuesday. I mean, I might miss some days, but I cannot miss Tuesday. I have to like
Tuesday. Yeah, I'm with you. I have a digital video recorder, so I'm always setting the DVR, but it's very interesting how sometimes I choose to, you know, watch it live or the day after, and other times I just go right into it. Like I wait to even just marathon.
Oh, no. I like to watch them as quick as possible. And then I didn't even know live tweeting existed until like 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, good. I mean,
yeah. But it's fun. You get to interact with a lot of people and other persons and hear their opinions and all those things.
Yeah, because it kind of seemed like it was a casual thing at first, and then the fandom was just building up right away. They were embracing it on social media.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Especially on Instagram. They would have so many funny behind-the-scenes kind of photos. It wasn't single-minded or anything. They really put a lot of effort into it, and it was like, it's so cool. I wish, if you got DVDs, is there a blooper reel I should know about?
yeah, but the Twitter FBI fandom, they're awesome. I mean, we have people from all over the world.
They're really nice, really polite. It's like, yeah, this is what you need with your fandom. It can't keep being toxic like it's been with Star Wars or Halloween. It's got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and some people ship Maggie and OA, some people do, but everybody respect each other, you know. Everybody respect each other. For me personally, I don't want them to be together. Yeah,
I did not know that was becoming a thing, but it does seem like everybody's got something where it's like, will they or won't they? And
yeah,
I feel like it'll be much like, I think that's a good contrast. It's going to be much like Stabler and Vincent, where it's never going to happen.
Don't get me started with that. To me, they're like a mini Olivia and Vincent.
Even said it. Yeah, they've been more. Why not
one of them leaving for 10 years? We cannot have that. Like, we cannot have that.
Well, exactly. And I mean, they've even said it multiple times. We'll never be able to be together. We've tried it. We'll never work. And yet, it's like the forbidden romance that it's kind of like Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad. You can't tell who's just doing that just to stir up a random Twitter war or who's just making it up, you know?
Oh, my God.
It's like, give it a rest, guys. Not
for me, I want them. I want them to, like, I want them to be endgame. That's it. Olivia and...
Or just be casual boyfriend and girlfriend or just roommates, you know? It can be like the Chicago shows where Kelly... you know, splits the rent with someone or
with Stella. Oh my God. And then I heard that she might leave. We don't know. She said she's not sure.
With Stella. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh my God. I don't think there's a stable relationship in the Dick Wolf world. The relationship is between Herman and his wife and probably between Mouch and Platt. We don't even see them that often.
That's a good point. Yeah. Because I mean, life is that way. And so it echoes life. Life is never stable. Life, you find that you gotta one day, you know, bail on the rent or move back in into a different house or quit your job that you've been working your ass off at and that you've found that you're not valued at and it's not worth the time and pain, or that your kids' progression is more important. You know, people need a wake up call. And I think that's what keeps people coming back to these shows, because they see a little bit of them in these.
Mm-hmm, yeah, but Rollins and Carisi, they're coming. I like them. I want
them. Oh yeah, that was in the bag. It's so funny how they hinted at that for like 3 years, and then it finally happened, and everyone was like, oh, it paid off. My God. What's so funny is my sister missed that. She saw most of that episode in which that happened on Law and Order SVU.
Oh, wow. And then she saw the recap.
She's like, what did I miss? I'm like, that was at the wedding that Stabler and that Finn was having and canceled. Oh.
I mean, I love them. And then they start up this thing with Casey and Brett. I mean, they started up and then they just pull them apart. Oh my God.
Yeah, Casey on Chicago Fire was kind of a thing. It was going to keep being because he's just – he kept coming – Kelly was always out of his shell and would just fess up mm-hmm. to relationships that weren't working, and Casey was kind of mm-hmm. the opposite. He took a while to embrace his personal life, and then mm-hmm. it just kind of became apparent. It's like, well, when people move apart, you know, there's no way he's going to be able to be loyal to Gabe after a while. He's going to have to say, yeah, we're no longer boyfriend or girlfriend anymore. Oh, wow. You live in a different city. I live here. It's just not. It's the reality. Guys get lonely.
And then Stella is still in Boston. Is that Boston? I think they say she's in.
I'm not to that point yet, but I think that is the case from what I heard. And it is kind of funny how they expose a lot of this news. Is like, some of them are very blunt and others will just say spoiler warning and they'll just say so-and-so is leaving. But it is interesting how sometimes they're very quiet on it. Sometimes it just means, oh, that, you know, the character's coming back, but they're just keeping you in wait. And other times it's like, no, for real, the actor is exiting. So they are wrapping this storyline up.
Oh my God. I don't know. So So their relationship part is on the rocks as well, Kelly and Stella, because, like, well, you haven't watched the last episode, but I think he was wondering if she's coming back or something of that sort, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm cool with anyone leaving, because I know it'll feel way more natural versus some of these others, where it's just like, you know, when anyone was leaving CSI or some of those other shows, it never felt too natural,
really,
like like with current NCIS, which we'll actually be talking about later. I thought they did a good job of having Mark Harmon depart and replacing him with Gary Cole, because it was just inevitable. It's just like,
but I used to watch NCIS with Ziva and Sasha Alexander, so I think after anything after season 12, I have no idea what it's about.
All good. It's been hard to follow. I'm surprised that show out of all of them has been on, and my late grandmother was into it. And so I kind of feel like I'm her looking glass. I'm her eyes to it for her. I'm like, oh, I would love to tell her about what happened, but I can't. Yeah.
But I heard that Mark is leaving, so I don't know. Is the show going to
be... He's still credited, and he might occasionally guest star, but they did give him a farewell. But I think, much like Ducky, he'll appear in like 3 episodes each season from this point on and just be credited for the rest.
Okay, so Ducky still appear in episodes?
Yes, Ducky is still on there. He's credited every episode, but he always appears in like 5 each season. So,
I think
they've done a good job of mentioning everybody and acknowledging them. Sometimes, I mean, they still acknowledge Tony DiNozzo, even though he's not on there, you know?
Yeah, I heard he left a long time, but I think it was last month I knew that Tony and...
He's definitely coming back.
I had no idea they had a kid together.
They're keeping it very secret. And that's just...
Yeah, but I didn't know they had a kid together, Ziva and Tony. I found out, like...
It is kind of funny. I was slow on it, too, and I had the treat of just binge-watching them all nonstop on Paramount Plus back when it was called just CBS Plus.
Oh, wow.
And
so I'm clueless to what's going on in
so for those who want to watch this or stream it or have given up cable, I guess you can buy the DVDs dirt cheap at a discount sale. If not, you can probably sign up for a Paramount Plus thing and you'll be instantly into it and stream away. These really are easy addiction, guys. These are just like, again,
I mean, I'm watching so much. I don't think I can watch another show. I'm watching so many shows.
Oh, yeah. And I'm the same way. Like, someone will recommend me a show, and I will always be very blunt with them, saying, I do honor your opinion. I do want to see that. But when we're doing these podcast episodes based off what popular stuff we've seen, it's like, I got to squeeze in this. It takes this X amount of hours and weeks, so right, I'm going to have to get to this. Maybe give me 2 months. I'll get back to you on that.
Yes, 2 months. Probably even 4 months, because I'm watching so much.
Oh, totally. And same thing with movies. It's like, if we're going to do a movie franchise, I need a time to actually, you know, find the every movie seems to have like a director's cut or special edition nowadays. So I'm like, well, now I need extra time to see the superior, you know, cut of the movie. So
right, yeah.
If this Blu-ray is very expensive, that's going to take a while. So let's, you know, and then we even have to see if we even want to talk about it and if you can be constructive on it. So that's the other thing too. You know, like, don't do the episode if you feel like it's going to be a rant or just something's going to get blown out of proportion. You know?
Right.
So this has been a delight having you on here.
Thank you.
Anything you want to promote on social media or follow, please let us know.
I'm mostly on Twitter. I mean, my at is at official _ Genzii, JENZII.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
It's been great having one of many fans on here. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was awesome.
Socially distanced fun.
Yeah.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll, yeah, popping up
absolutely
at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was
how
be a
did
rough
you watch
movie
this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pivot with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 out. Bana 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 out.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes and gratuitous boobies, it's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy
at eilfm.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography, which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Zemanoff, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts, and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod, or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
Hi there. It's Heather from the Watching Netflix Without You podcast. Did you know that there are over 1,200 Netflix original feature films and documentaries? And that number is only growing. So I've made it my mission to watch as many as I possibly can. Then, with a delightful guest or guests, disclaimer, more often than not my brother Ryan, we spend an episode rating, reviewing, and discussing a film at length. The first half of every episode is spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet. And in the second half, after a very clear spoiler warning, we dive into it. And that's really about it. You can listen to Watching Netflix Without You on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a-